You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Shrunker 99.94. My name is Mark Charlie from Mirrorland, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Varsi Devon from the Papere. Estelle, I hope you're having a great time and enjoying the weather in SL. So, England Lions, which is the kind of England A team, the England development squad, future England players, are currently in Sri Lanka at the moment playing the Sri Lanka A. They're playing their what is kind of branded Bazball. If you watch, if you're a Sri Lanka cricket fan, you'll just remember it as what cricket was like in the 90s and the early noughties. I was going to start by asking you, Estelle, how have you found it so far? Have you enjoyed watching this England side? Have you enjoyed the kind of brand of cricket that they play? Have you enjoyed the games?
Yeah, unfortunately, the first two games, like there was the warm-up and the first unofficial test, there was no live telecast. So the Papere did some recordings and we had some highlights up. That's about the only kind of viewing we were able to experience. But I think just looking at the scorecards, it was like it started off with a bang, right? 413 on day one by the Lions. And to be honest, I thought Sri Lanka are going to really, really struggle because one thing is... you have seen even in on flat pitches, Sri Lanka struggling with the bat, right? And then, I mean, the board president's 11 came from behind and managed a superb win in that warm-up game. I don't think anybody was expecting that after the Lions got to that 413 on day one.
Yeah, absolutely. And so normally, when we talk about kind of longer form cricket, when we talk about test cricket or full day cricket, the thing we always say is Sri Lanka players don't play a lot of it. They don't play that much of it. I haven't looked at the exact data, but I don't think in terms of how much first class cricket the English team would have been playing, I don't think there's a huge disparity for this contest in terms of how much the two sides would have played. They're both kind of youngish sides. I know there's, you know, Haseeb is obviously he's played a lot of test cricket, actual, you know, full test cricket for England. He's, you know, people who follow this career closer than me can go into great detail about how he's had to rebuild his international career. He's kind of in the third time he's rebuilding phase kind of thing. But Alex Lees as well, who has played quite a lot of test cricket for England. But other than that, there's a lot of these other the Lions squad haven't played a huge amount. And it's the same for the Sri Lanka A team as well, right? There's a couple of players, Mbaldenia, Kamindi Mendis, who've played a fair bit of international cricket in different formats. Well, Mbaldenia's played quite a bit of test cricket, I suppose. But it's still a relatively young side. And I think it's, you know, in terms of experience, it's actually probably pretty even. I thought after that first, Sri Lanka A game, I wasn't able to watch it in London. But I was frantically refreshing scorecards. I thought maybe they were going to get over the line though on that final day, which ended in the draw, right? But I was like, this is the most typical Gaul test, isn't it? Where you put the Sri Lanka gets skittled out quite cheaply, then the opposition come in, they put on what they think is a good total, then Sri Lanka come in again, they put on a huge total, and then you don't want to be, batting on that in those final sessions in Gaul, because it gets really tricky, especially if you haven't got a huge amount of experience playing spin on that kind of surface as well. And you know, I don't think many of those Lions did. And it was just, it just became a weather and time thing, right? If there was a little bit more time left in the game or the weather didn't hamper it, the lights didn't hamper it, I thought they likely would have got that win, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they lost 1 hour in the end there on day four. Like you said, typical kind of goal pitch, right? 136 all out Sri Lanka on day one. Not looking pretty. Kind of reminiscent of that series where Sri Lanka beat Australia 3-0. Again, there, Sri Lanka, I think, were bowled out first day of the first test for 118, 120, and everybody thought, oh no, it's happening, you know. But like, if you really look at things, the conversation surrounding baseball, right? I think apart from England, a lot of people have been critical of it, because a lot of people seem to think, or that their perspective is that it's just, you know, just go after the bowling. But I think even in this Sri Lanka A game, the first unofficial test, what was refreshing to see was that opportunity Sri Lanka had to win the game was because England were not playing for a draw, right? The Lions weren't playing for a draw. They were going after that target. I think they were said something like 330 to win. And that is, in a sense, that is what the ethos of baseball is, right? Where you're looking for results. You're looking for a positive result in every game you play. You're not looking to play negative cricket. Whether that means, you know, chasing after every delivery and trying to go at 7 runs and over, which I think they did today England did today in New Zealand. But it could be that, or it could be just, you know, looking at a situation where usually you'd be looking for a draw, you look for a win. So I think you asked me about like how I felt the games were, and it was refreshing to see that kind of approach. What was even better, I felt, was that Sri Lanka was sticking with them on that, right? They weren't backing down. They weren't playing, you know, typical test cricket. They were sticking to they were going along with the Lions.
I've obviously, Murali and we, where we talk a little bit more about the England team, we've talked a lot about baseball. And the one thing I will say is that once England show that intent of, we have not come here not to get no result, we've come here to get a result, we're here to play, be it to win or to lose, it's kind of the decision they've made is that losing almost is better than getting a draw or even tying the game, right? And once one side has that kind of ethos, it's absolutely impossible for the other side not to kind of adopt it as well. I don't know, cricket isn't a confrontational sport the way that football or rugby are, but the kind of ethos of it, you know, the way in which you're going to play the game to a certain extent manipulates how the opposition approach it as well. And you're quite right. But also, I think it just plays into the way Sri Lanka naturally plays cricket, regardless of what side it is. The way cricket is played in that island, it should be played in a kind of semi-aggressive manner, and played to get results and played, you know, for big scores and to get wickets. The whole playing out, going at 3 or 4 runs and over, and has never really been a hallmark, you know, something that you would associate with Sri Lanka cricket. I'm not sure we can't do it. We can do it. And in the past, we've done it, but it's not something that comes naturally to us. So I think it's great. I think, this series, actually, bizarrely, I wasn't expecting a huge amount from it, but it's kind of got definitely in social media, it seems to have got quite a lot of attention, doesn't it? If for no other reason, I saw a picture of a Thalagoya running around the pitch earlier on today, and I was like, that definitely needs to be retweeted. Anyway, Estelle, should we take a quick break? When I come back, or when we come back, shall we talk about the players that have stood out and the possible selection dilemmas this is causing?
I'm Jared Kimber, and I host two podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game, with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-travelling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
So at the point of recording this, we're kind of a game and a half the way through the 2 4-day games. There's two batsmen in particular who've stood out. I think they've both got mentions on this podcast over the last 50 odd episodes at points. That's Madhushka and Cruz Pillay. Are they getting a double 100 at Gaul in a 4-day game against any sort of international side, probably puts you up there in contention for the test team. The test side's going out to New Zealand shortly in a not very long time. Has he put himself into contention? And what about Lazarus Cruz-Pillay as well? He's somebody who's been playing quite well across a number of formats the last few months.
Yeah, with Madushka, I think he's just had like, he's had a phenomenal last like 12 to 15 months. Domestically, I think last season he had 2 double hundreds, 1 triple hundred, and a couple of other hundreds in like 11 or 15 innings, right? Like incredible batting, incredible consistency. Like you said, getting a 200 in goal is not easy. Day three pitch, you know, in any surface to keep your concentration and focus going for that long, it's not easy. So he's been phenomenal. I think he got a 150 again in the warm-up game as well. So he's definitely in the conversation, I think, in terms of the New Zealand squad. My question, and I think something that we should probably address, is like, whose place does he take? Because a lot of people, like if you look at Sri Lanka's test side, the only kind of position that is open, you could say, is the keeping position, right? Niroshan Dikwala hasn't had a bad run of form, but he obviously doesn't feature in the other formats, and that big three-figure mark has eluded him right throughout his career. He's had issues, been up and down with form, but he's widely considered, at least the last time the discussion came up, as the best wicketkeeper in Sri Lanka. So that really seems like the only, to me, that seems like the only position where Madushka can get into the side. But interestingly, he didn't keep for Sri Lanka A. So I'd be really interested to know what the thinking is in that setup and what they're looking for from him if they do want to fit him in into the squad that travels to New Zealand.
Yeah, I think the other two considerations are, is it's been, it'll be 6 months between test matches for the full senior side. We're expecting some of the senior test players to play. I thought we would have seen a few more of them at this stage, because I thought they might have fancied going up against different bowling attack. Because obviously I know they've been playing domestic cricket, but I think playing any sort of international touring side brings a different element and spice to it, as it were. The other thing is I have absolutely no idea how he's going to go making his debut on Kiwi pitches, right? I saw the schedule came out earlier from SLC, and there is one warm-up game, which I think is a two-day game before the test start. I think if they end up taking him, I say if, look, that's not me giving an opinion, but at this stage, we don't even know who the chief selector is. So who knows if he'll make the squad or not. Weird and stranger things have happened in Sri Lankan cricket. If he's there, I think you've got to throw him into that two-day game. And if he makes runs, it's not the best way of doing it. It's a bit attritional and it's a bit kind of, you know, Darwin-esque, where it's a bit survival of the fittest. But I think it's, you know, how's he doing on those surfaces? Can he make runs on those surfaces? If he's doing it, I think you've just got to find a place for him. And I suspect in that two-day game and any sort of work that they do as soon as they get to New Zealand, they'll be able to figure out which players look like they're in form and which players aren't in form.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they're going to select the side. As I say, it's not the most scientific way of doing it. You know, if you're a Sri Lanka fan, you might be saying, well, how do other teams do it? I think they'd probably be trying something quite similar. I know when South Africa were in England last year, South Africa ended up picking players who'd just been playing domestic club cricket in England. So,
what other choice does Sri Lanka have, right? Like you said, when did we last play a test? In August against Pakistan. So it's been a long time, and form can change, and, you know, things can change with players. And you have, in my opinion, you've got to give the guy an opportunity when he's in form, right? There's no better time for him to debut than when his confidence is at a high. If you're going to keep him around that squad and make him tour different countries and not give him an opportunity until somebody's injured or, you know, some position is vacant, then he might lose that confidence and that form in the interim, right? I also think maybe, I don't know how Pathum Nisanka is doing with his injury. The back injury, obviously a recurring one. So we don't know whether that might also be a possibility. But I completely agree with you. I think they should take him and give him that opportunity in the warm-up and then pick the team from there.
Yeah. What about Cruz Pelé? Do you think he makes it into the squad?
Yeah. He's an interesting one, isn't he? I mean, he doesn't look like anything much, to be honest. Like, I mean, if you're looking at like aesthetically pleasing batters, but he's getting runs and he's getting them quickly and he seems like a really fearless batter. I think that's that attitude that he has is what we've seen right throughout. Like, we were talking about him last year just before the World Cup as well when Sri Lanka played that invitational tournament. And just the way he came out there, it's almost like, you know, do or die for him. But he's willing to take those risks and keep playing his natural game. I was just reading an article. I interviewed him when he was 17, which was not long ago because he's very young. And that kind
did
of...
Did he call you auntie him, or Estelle?
No, he didn't call me auntie. He didn't call me auntie.
That's a reoccurring joke, by the way, if you just tuned in. Because the under 19 girls call us auntie and uncle, which is embarrassing.
So when he was 17, I was also younger. So, so that attitude he had at that point as well. I remember him coming to our office in Colombo for the chat, and he just seemed a very confident young guy, right? And sometimes that's not really what you see from a lot of younger Sri Lankans. They are a bit backward, but he seemed like a really confident guy. He was happy to talk about all his achievements and, you know, kind of market himself as well in some ways. And I think you see that even now, the way he goes about his batting is like he wants to play his natural game. And I guess you have to give props to the coach as well, you know, for giving them that freedom and not putting any, you know, pressure on them to play in a certain way.
I saw a bit of him when he came over to England last English summer with the Sri Lanka development side, immersion side. And I thought he started off looking nervous, but once he got through those patches, he always batted quite with more and more fluency as he got through the innings. He's one of those, there was a lot of players on that tour. I was excited to see where they would go. And he was definitely one of them. And I think if he can get that confidence in his game, I think he could definitely potentially become an international player at some stage. Estelle, let's take another break. When I come back, let's talk about the bowling and also what else we might expect from that New Zealand tour.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sarah Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI, we've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
Yeah, welcome back. Do make sure you download the 99.94 app. Follow us on social media. We discovered recently that 99.94 is on Tinder. So if you find it, do match with us. I think we're on Hinge and Bumble. I'm not sure how any of those work, but I believe they are dating apps. If you see it, please say hi. Let's talk about Emble Denyer, because he was in the side for a long time. There was a lot of debate about whether or not he should be in the side. He missed the last few tests we played. Prabhat Jayasurya came in and was an absolute phenomenon. I was expecting Prabhat to play in these games. I assume the reason he was left out is because they don't want too many players seeing him and learning how to play him. I do feel that's a bit of a shame for Prabhat because I think he's 30 now, so I'm not sure if he's going to be around. And you know, obviously he's a slow bowler, so he'll be around for a while. But you know, he's not going to be around in 20, 15 years' time, as it were. This is meant to be the series, I thought, where Emble Denyer kind of laid a marker down. He's kind of done all right, but he's not set the world alight, right?
Yeah, I think he's actually done quite poorly for a guy who's the experience he has. I think across both teams, he's probably the most experienced player, most accomplished player, definitely. I mean, he's won Sri Lanka test matches, right, away from home. So he just hasn't looked like himself, I think, since he suffered that finger injury in South Africa. I think that was 2021. He just hasn't been able to find that rhythm. And it's really a pity because he has everything, nearly everything you would think to be a successful spin bowler, right? Particularly, you know, a guy who doesn't necessarily depend on that much spin. You've seen him do well in countries like South Africa, but he just, I think, is struggling to find a bit of rhythm. And it's really a pity because he used to be Sri Lanka's, I mean, I think in probably in 2019, pre-pandemic, you were thinking this guy is going to be Sri Lanka's number one spin bowler for the next 10 years, right? And suddenly, you know, he's, if you look at the number of runs he's gone for in this series, he's picked up a couple of wickets here and there, but he's gone at nearly 4 to 5 runs and over, right? Which is, for a bowler of his caliber, is not good enough in these circumstances. So, kind of disappointing. Prabhat Jayasurya, I feel like maybe they're already, like, their minds are already made up that he's going to New Zealand. So they didn't feel like it was necessary to kind of test him out. They've also got like Praveen Jayavikrama in the side. So I think they want to see who they want to take between Ambuldenia and Jayavikrama. Don't think they'll be taking that many spinners. It doesn't like seem to make sense to take that many spinners to New Zealand. But yeah, Ambuldenia, I feel, has been disappointed. I hope there's somebody who can, you know, speak to him and try to get things right.
I was going to ask about that tour. That was going to be the kind of final thing we discussed. The questions come in. Any interest in seeing the NZ tour? I think the question before all that is there any news on the selection? On the selectors? Is I haven't heard anything. I don't know if you might have heard anything because I know you've got your ear close to the ground on these things, Estelle.
No, I think there still hasn't been any word on what's going to happen with the selection committee. We don't know whether there'll be interim selection committee that comes in just for the next couple of months. So it's all a bit up in the air, which also, I guess, brings into question how they selected the World Cup squad for the women. But, I mean, I think that's a question for another day. Hopefully, we'll hear before the end of the month, right? Because the tour starts on the 3rd or 4th of March, if I'm not mistaken.
Estelle, let's leave it over there. We'll be back very soon with lots more content about Sri Lanka cricket. There's loads going on. Women's World Cup starts in a couple of days. They won their first game, or warm-up game, by the skin of their teeth. And we're looking forward to a long campaign for the women in South Africa, and we've also at some point going to have to discuss Kusal Mendes in South Africa as well, because he's having a bit of a stormer thus far.
Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.